This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:06, Tuesday, the 9th of August. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. In front of me is the one and only Philip C, and I'm Wong Xiao Ning. Now, in half an hour, we'll be celebrating Singapore's National Day with Dr. Oh Yee Sun, Principal Advisor at the Pacific Research Centre. But let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
The Dow was up 0.1%, but the S&P 500 and Nasdaq were both down 0.1%. Over across in Asia, the Nikkei and Shanghai Composite were both in positive territory, up 0.3%, but the Hang Seng was down 0.7%, and both the Singapore STI and FBM KLCI were down 0.4%.
So a bit of this and a bit of that, but really not going anywhere in any particular direction, right? So for more on this, we have on the line with us Joe Kunin, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joe. Now, I get this sense of deja vu that we've been here before. So we've got one day up and then another day down and markets really not going anywhere. Are markets looking to CPI data on Wednesday for direction as to where it should go?
Yeah, definitely the CPI on Wednesday, the PPI, Producer Price Index, on Thursday. It's really going to give us an idea. Are we near the peak with inflation? Because we were surprised by last month. So, yeah, we are hanging, and you're right. It's kind of like this. When you're in a bear market, you have these rallies and pullbacks and rallies. So it's very frustrating for a lot of people, because just when you think we're ready to take its lift off, then we get dragged back down. So CPI is hugely important.
So essentially, we can't declare peak hawkishness until the print is out, isn't it?
Yeah, it's way too early, even though Jay Powell talked about, the Fed funds being neutral. But yeah, when you've got an inflation rate above 9%, we're nowhere near mission accomplished. So even if we get like a high 8.5% print, we still have the Fed has a lot of work yet to be done. A lot of work to do yet.
And meanwhile, when we look at the fixed income market, we see a deeper inversion, right? So the 2-year exceeds 10-year by the most in 20 years. So market seems to be pretty much convinced that a recession is here. Do you share that same view, Joe?
Yeah, we think there's a shallow recession forming. Maybe it's, we're in it right now. So I don't think the bond market's too far off base, but those employment numbers, the income numbers, were pretty robust. The consumers, the consumers out there, they're in stores, at the malls, at the airports, you can't get a restaurant reservation. So you can't have a recession without the consumer, but growth is slowing. There's no doubt about it. Inflation is eating into real incomes. No doubt about that.
But Joe, Kathy Wood, she said we're in a recession already.
her fund certainly is, in terms of like what's going to happen. In that sense, it's a hard call. Technically, you could say we are in a recession. There's no doubt about that. Quarter one, quarter two. The key is the outlook. The risks are to the downside. The Fed is still, we think they're going to go 50, 75 basis points in September. They're going to go again, fourth quarter. So we're not out of the woods just yet. We're not near the Fed funds peak. That's the key. And we're not near peak inflation. Maybe we're near peak inflation, but not near the Fed funds rate. So we've got a lot of work yet to do.
Yeah. Okay, so help me navigate this, Joe, because I've never been through a period like this in economy where we're in a technical recession, right? Because we've had two quarters of negative growth. But yet employment still remains extremely strong. Consumption is robust. How does one navigate such a market like this? What are the options left for the Fed, actually?
That's a great question in the sense that, how much can the Fed push to raise rates without causing recession? You think the Fed would be happy with a tight labor market and, unemployment 3.5%? The president sure is, or the Democrats. So it's a tough balancing act, but, we still have to deal with putting the inflation genie back in the bottle, and that's going to take a long time. That doesn't, it takes a while for inflation to ramp up, and it takes even longer to bring it back down. And that was the big mistake of the Fed, saying this is transitory. It wasn't even close from last year. So it's going to take some time. But, inflation moderation, that'll give the markets a boost, because then the markets will start pricing in Fed rate cuts for the second half of next year. Maybe that's premature, but the markets can get ahead of themselves. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're talking about that in, say, October, November.
So Fed, inflation, consumer sentiment, these are the macro factors that drive. I want to get your perspective on the recent bill that was passed by the Senate, right? Does it have any repercussions in the short term to the markets? Like, we would have seen some reverberations on, like, say, the pharma stocks, but they didn't quite materialize, right?
Yeah, well, the renewables got a little bit of a boost here, solar and some of the other parts of that component. So, it's too soon to see how this all shakes out. Prescription drugs, what that means for pharmaceuticals, price controls. So we'll see how that plays out. But, really, the renewable space, EVs got a lift here, and the infrastructure in and around battery storage, that was to be expected. But it's one thing to pass a bill, have the president sign it. Then it takes a long time, however, before this impacts earnings, right? I mean, the earnings impact from this bill, we're probably talking late 23 or 24. So, I mean, don't get too excited.
Okay, so Joe, you've mentioned that probably come next year, later next year, the Fed will actually start cutting rates. And some of the flow through from this bill will start materializing. Now, is it too early to position oneself for these things? And what kind of sectors should we really be looking out for?
I mean, we like energy still, no doubt about it. Energy is one of our favorite sectors. Another sector we like is just defense and cybersecurity, because what you saw happen with Taiwan, China, U.S. over the last couple of weeks, the war in Ukraine grinds on. But also, we like agriculture. And I do think, the metals and minerals that you're going to need to make all these EVs and solar panels, there's a lot of upside. There's a crunch on lithium, cobalt, manganese. I mean, all these commodities, base minerals and metals, we don't have enough of them. So I think the miners continue to do well. Energy does well because, Europe is staring at a very, very dark winter. I don't mean to be so dark so early in the morning, but, the energy crunch in Europe is still in front of us, not behind us.
And, just shifting to currencies, right, we saw the Japanese yen stage a strong rebound against the greenback, retreating from the near 140 levels to the low 130s. Is it premature to say this marks the end of recent short-selling trades against the yen?
I would say it's premature. And I would also say that the yen was, like, oversold, so it was time for a bounce, get a little bit of a bid here. But Jay Powell is much more hawkish, more bent on raising interest rates than, say, the Bank of Japan. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a little bit, the yen start to weaken here. But I think the big move down in the yen is behind us, but I don't see, a huge move up in terms of strength, yen versus dollar.
Okay, Joe, one last question for me, and that's about the UK, because you brought up Europe, somewhat related, although out of Brexit, now with Brexit, they're out of Europe. The recent statements from the Bank of England point to a very bleak winter for the UK. Inflation hitting maybe 13% by October, clearly in a recession. What options does it have, actually? And is this going to be reflected later on in the statements coming out from the European Union as well? Is that cold winter spreading throughout?
Well, remember the UK is tied to the European Union, even being outside. So, as EU is weakened, so is the trade between the two parties. So, but no, I think, the energy, the food, the lack of trade with the EU, proximity, UK had a lot of ties with Russia, businesses, commercial, the oligarchs, that's all been cut or curtailed. That's hurt as well. So it's Europe, UK, part of that. they're the weakest link in the global economy. And people are forgetting that I still think the worst is yet to come if the war drags on. And it looks like it's going to when it comes to rationing of gasoline, energy, heating oil. It's a different world over there from, say, the U.S. or even Asia.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, saying that winter is coming early.
The worst is yet to come.
It's almost like a Game of Thrones kind of warning for Europe. Things are going to get much, much worse. Meanwhile, turning our attention to SoftBank, because the SoftBank Group founder and CEO, Masayoshi Son, has said that he plans widespread cost-cutting at his Japanese conglomerate and its Vision Fund investment arm after a record $23.4 billion loss on plunging portfolio valuations and Forex losses. So that the loss, the vast majority of that money, $17.3 billion, in the Vision Fund, as it marked down the value of holdings such as Coupang, SenseTime, and DoorDash.
My eyes are wide open just looking at these numbers. Eye-watering numbers, Shaoning.
Just one quarter of our national foreign reserves.
Exactly. SoftBank reported a $6.1 billion foreign exchange loss because of the weaker yen. Now, SoftBank and Masayoshi-san are now trying to wait out the technology slump so that they can extract a return on their $32 billion purchase of chip designer unit Arm Limited. Now, the CEO was planning an Arm IPO for Arm next year, and he has said he aims to make the offering the biggest ever for a chip company. I mean, these are really challenging times for SoftBank.
Well, he had a bit of a rough patch even a few years ago with WeWork. WeWork was the other disaster that he's had, but he actually admits that he bought into startups at the height of the market. And, you know, he's taking responsibility for it. So, okay, we'll give him a bit of credit for it. But I wonder how long investors are going to be patient with him, because they have had to mark down 284 companies in the portfolio in the last quarter, while only 35 were up. So not
10%.
Not very good results for him.
Not very good at all.
But up next, we'll be speaking to political commentator Dr. Azmin Hassan on Perikatan National's fracturing relationship with Dato' Sri Ismail Sabri. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.